Welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN this week. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Now, it was just 1 week ago where we heard a chorus of the three top state politicians, Governor Rick Scott, House Speaker Richard Corcoran, and Senate President Joe Negron. They were all singing, seemingly from the same songbook, about a three-day special legislative session. The intent was a quick rewrite of the spending plan for public schools and money for job incentives and tourism. But that was last week, and this is Florida after all. Today, Friday, the day the special session is scheduled to come to a quiet end, there is dissonance instead and disagreement. Just last night, Senate President Joe Negron called it a, quote, fake narrative, end quote, in the media, that there was ever a predetermined deal before this week that the Senate was not upholding now.
An agreement was not announced. The budget vetoes hadn't even been done. The bills hadn't been filed. I hadn't seen any bills or language on EFI or visit or other things that potentially were described.
Now, Negron says he was not aware Governor Scott was even going to call for a special session until midnight before he appeared with the governor and the speaker of the Florida House at a 10 a.m. Friday news conference 1 week ago. But he says his presence there with his fellow Republicans did not mean that he agreed to a deal he says was between the governor and the Florida House.
But we're not just going to rubber stamp an agreement that two parties made without our priorities being taken into account.
Those Senate priorities, an increase in higher education spending, funding for safety net hospitals, increasing the state's savings account. Now, we'll talk about details of the special session in a moment, but first, how did Florida's legislature get here when just late last year in November, House Speaker Corcoran made this pledge?
It's easy to understand the motive. What we're trying to do is to say that have the most transparent and open process in the nation, and I think we've achieved that.
With the promise of all this openness, yet behind closed-door talks leading to massive bills on education, for instance, that helped lead to this special session this week, is there something about the process of making laws in Florida that is broken or at least bruised? 800-743-WLRN, your thoughts on legislative transparency and lawmaking in the Sunshine State. 800-743-9576. You can also tweet us your thoughts at WLRN. Former Governor and U.S. Senator Bob Graham is along with us. Welcome back, Senator, to the Florida Roundup.
Good.
Nice to see you again.
Thanks, Tom.
Is this kind of discord that we have during even a special session between chambers, that are controlled by the same party and the executive wing of the Florida government, is this common in your estimation?
I would say it's not common, but it's not unusual either. One of the sessions in the early 80s, I ended up vetoing the entire budget, called the legislature back because I felt that they had not adequately provided funding for education. We had about a week or more of a special session, and at the end of that time, we'd arrived at a consensus that was satisfactory to the legislature and to me.
Did you have those budget negotiations before calling for a special session, as seems to be the case in the last several weeks, where there were active participation in conversations between the governor's office and the office of the Speaker of the House?
Yes, we hadn't reached agreement before the session started, but we were well along. We had the right people sitting down at the table over the various aspects of education funding, and they had moved the ball so that it was not that difficult to get to the end line by the time a week was up.
This is the third special session in two. This is the second special session in 3 years for the Florida legislature. This time it's education spending, job incentives, and tourism spending. The previous time was about health care spending. With that kind of frequency, is it evidence of something within the process, the 60-day legislative session process, that could be reformed or repaired?
There probably are some procedural changes that need to be made, and I'd like to talk about those in a moment. But I think it's primarily the people involved. And I think that we have a situation where there hasn't been enough leadership provided over a period of time, not just beginning when the legislative session started. For instance, one area that is in contention during this three-day period is higher education. We need to have a general state policy. What are we trying to accomplish in the area of higher education? I've just concluded co-chairing a Lumina Foundation commission on the future of public higher education, and there are some fundamental coherent choices to be made. Florida has not made such a fundamental choice. Second, I think the governor needs to accept the responsibility to be the representative of the entire state. Legislators are elected from and feel responsible to a specific geographic area of the state that where their constituents live. The governor is elected statewide and has the responsibility to look above the parochial interest of 160 Senate and House districts to what's in the state interest and advocate for that. I don't think there has been a sufficient amount of that to advocacy. I always considered it a defeat to the governor's office when you had to veto something. You should have intervened earlier and avoided being placed in that position.
Let me bring in a couple of veteran reporters of Florida politics. Derek Hamm is along with us via Skype, senior writer for the News Service of Florida. Sergio Bustos with us over the telephone, senior editor of Politico Florida. Darrell, let's begin in the capital city. Senator Graham's critique of procedure and leadership, it is very centralized leadership that is exerted in the legislature, in the office of the House, the Speaker of the House, and the Senate President. And we heard very different areas of priorities throughout the legislative session, which perhaps is one of the reasons why we're left here on a Friday of a special session, really questioning whether or not there's going to be a second special session to get things done.
Yeah, I mean, the centralized form of leadership, I'm not sure exactly what you were alluding to with that, but I will tell you that Senator Negron, the Senate President Negron's press conference last night that you referenced earlier was just one of the most bizarre moments for many of us who've been around for a long time. Just the Senate president took 45 minutes to explain to reporters how when he showed up at a press conference less than a week prior with the House Speaker and the governor to announce a special session, that didn't mean that he was part of the deal. And it was just sort of mind-blowing that, you know, he said that there was a fake narrative mm-hmm. that was put out by the governor's office. And that, so, I mean, the whole idea that you would come in on the second day of a 3-day session, I wanted to comment about something that Senator Graham said when he made that veto of the education budget. That was more than 3 decades ago. Mm-hmm. And while you asked about how unusual this kind of a thing is, you know, it is unusual in that you have one party, as he did then, Democrats were in control of the governor's office and of the legislature. You have Republicans now in control of both chambers and the governor's office. And so it's unusual to this extent for things to fall apart so publicly and for there to be so much, you know, finger pointing and blaming.
And let me bring Sergio. Is Sergio what Dara describes as the public falling apart of any perceived agreement because of the back room kind of quiet shuttle diplomacy that's been happening between offices of these lawmakers, but not in public with the lawmakers on the floor of the House and the floor of the Senate?
Yeah, I mean, as Sarah said, I think the Negron press conference yesterday, where he spoke to reporters, this is at the end of the second day of the special session with only one left. And, you know, in this era of fake news, Senator Negron accused Governor Scott of promoting fake news. And you got to wonder, well, why didn't you say something earlier? Because why would you even attend the press conference if, in fact, you weren't in agreement with what they're going to be doing. Now, that said, he said he was kind of maybe had been ambushed, if you will. But still, he had all week to say something. He could have said something the next day. The one thing that I would say, just to add to the conversation, is medical marijuana is an excellent example of I don't know how dysfunctional the lawmakers can be and also how functional they can be. On the one hand, they spent 60 days and an extra day to deal with implementing the rules for medical marijuana and got nowhere.
Right.
60 days. But this week, it took them just 3 days to reach agreement. So you got to wonder what's in the water up there.
Governor Graham, you've had a lot of Tallahassee water in your system through the years.
I hope it's washed out.
I did not say what are they smoking up there.
Understood.
That would have been too easy.
Understood. But
they have not moved the marijuana issue from medicinal purposes to sort of personal psychological.
No, not at all. But let's bring this back to the procedure here. To Sergio's point, Senator, 61 days to deal with an issue that voters overwhelmingly told the legislature they'd like some rules and policies around, and they weren't able to cross the finish line. And here they are with a much tighter deadline. They're able to do it. So these legislative disputes intra-party, when you have control of both chambers as well as the governor's mansion, as was during a good deal of your tenure, how do these disputes, how should they get worked out in public? How are they getting worked out in your estimation today?
Well, they should get largely worked out before the legislature meets. There should be some general agreement as to what it is we want to accomplish, for instance, with medical marijuana. My experience is the earlier that you start that debate and the more open that debate is, not decided by just a small group of people in a back room, but a serious public debate contributes significantly towards the feeling of responsibility by the legislature to come to closure. If I could just, my main complaint about this legislative session is that there were a number of things that the people had also asked the legislature to do, such as under Amendment 1, 2014.
This is the environmental amendment, yeah.
To purchase environmentally endangered lands, particularly to protect our threatened water supplies. The legislature completely ignored that and zeroed it out. And it should have gotten, by standards of that constitutional amendment, $300 million. So there just doesn't seem to be a lot of attention paid to what the people have so clearly they want. So I would say one answer to your question is listen more and talk less.
Well, let's listen to some of those voters. Amy Lund teaches philosophy at Miami-Dade College. She's a member of the WLRN Miami Herald Public Insight Network. And we asked the network about their thoughts of transparency during this legislative session. Professor Lund sent us this note.
I want to say I was shocked, but I mean, nothing. It's hard to be shocked this political cycle. So I guess I was just disappointed and sort of felt disempowered. Because once it happens behind closed doors and in this way where it's all rolled in together and it's sort of hard to do anything short of a veto, you just feel like they truly don't want public discussion or discourse or comment even. Like there's no room for compromise.
Some of this procedure that we've seen this year has been more amplified than we've seen in previous years. For instance, this idea of conforming bills. There were more than a dozen of them this year. State pension and employee health care, Visit Florida contractual rules, performance standards for universities, and of course HB 7069, which is teacher bonuses, charter school, and other provisions. We'll talk more specifics about that. All of those were these conforming bills. So they dictate policy that goes toward a budget item, and there's no room for amendment. The amendment procedure doesn't exist for these conforming rules. Derek Hamm with News Service of Florida, talk to us a little bit about the procedures that the leadership in the House and the Senate used for these conforming bills this session compared to others and what that has led to.
Well, it's led to a variety of bills being passed that include items that were never fully vetted by both chambers and that were never voted on. I think the most egregious of those was this 7069, this bill that had a $415 million price tag that included I think, about a dozen education bills in it, and it was included some of the priorities of the Senate, of the House Speaker, excuse me, mm-hmm. of Speaker Corcoran. I'd be very interested to hear what Senator Graham has to say about the legislature, especially the Speaker Corcoran standing up and professing this to be the most open and transparent legislature ever, and at the same and defending this. I mean, we've all been asking him, how can you say it's open and transparent when this bill was cooked up behind closed doors, came out basically in its full form, and included things that the Senate side had never voted on at a minimum. And, you know, he insists that it's open and transparent, and he, I think, is focusing mostly on those projects that get tucked into the budget.
And Speaker Corcoran also pointed out that some of the ingredients that wound up in the big omnibus bill, the 7069 bill that's created so much tension and controversy, that those ingredients that were all in separate bills went through oftentimes the committee process and had the public hearings, but it was only when they were put together behind the closed doors, Senator Graham, into this one big bill, and then it was a conforming piece of legislation, so it was take it or leave it proposition for lawmakers.
The word conforming means that a decision is made as to how much money to appropriate for a particular undertaking, and then the conforming bill is the authorization for that amount of money. Now, in the U.S. Congress, it's done in just the opposite direction. You first have to pass an authorization bill, which gives you the authority to undertake an activity. Then step two, through the appropriations mm-hmm. process, is how much to fund for that now authorized activity. We've seen a lot of this in the Everglades, which is constantly having projects authorized and then seek funding for them. But this idea of just coming up with a number and saying we're going to give $150 million to charter schools and then figure out what the guidelines are going to be is, I think, quite backward, and lends itself to this kind of surreptitious lawmaking.
Senator Graham, stick with us. We got more on the procedure of the legislative session. Has it broken down for Florida lawmakers? Sergio Busto, senior editor for Politico, is along with us, as is Derek Hamm, senior writer for the News Service of Florida. 800-743-WLRN. Are you satisfied with the laws that are being written in your name by lawmakers? 800-743-WLRN as the Florida Roundup continues. Back on the Florida Roundup on WLRN. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson. When Governor Scott called lawmakers back to Tallahassee for 3 days this week for a special session, there were three reasons, according to the governor: money for tourism marketing, money for job incentives, and spending on public education. Now, other issues have come up in the past 72 hours, medical marijuana, Medicaid spending, just among them, as this session is barreling toward what is supposed to be a finish later today on Friday. Former U.S. Senator, former governor of Florida, Bob Graham, is still with us here on the Roundup. Sergio Busto, senior editor for Politico, and Derek Hamm is a senior writer at the News Service of Florida. She's with us via Skype in Tallahassee. Dara, the clock is ticking here. Time is marching forward. Will the special session end conclusively with an agreement on education spending, on job incentive spending, and tourism spending?
Well, last night it looked like everything was going to heck in a handbasket. So after the president's
President Joe Negron, president of the Florida
Senate.
That's
right. Yeah. Yes, but I just spoke this morning, right before I actually joined your program, to the Senate budget chief, Jack Latvala, and he said, I told him I was going to be on this show and I needed to know what's the deal. Is there a deal or is there no deal? Plus, I'm supposed to be on vacation. I was supposed to be on this week. And so I need to know.
What did he tell
you? Have to postpone again. He said, we have the framework for a deal. And so we are working towards that, which is a very polite way of saying they're right at that moment, about 15 minutes ago, there wasn't a deal, but it was, he wasn't willing to say that they would be unable to complete their business.
All right. Sergio Bustos, so, then where does this leave us then? The governor authorized 3 days. That time ends Friday night.
Yeah, I think this is what, you know, if you pull back the camera a bit, try to see the forest of the trees here, I think this is what leads to a lot of the cynicism in the public. You know, you heard Senator Graham talking about the way they do things in Washington, you know, with the, you know, authorization bills. And one of my favorite terms up there was the omnibus spending bill, which basically translates to everything in the kitchen sink tossed into one bill. Again, I think all of this leads to cynicism, and it doesn't help the kind of democratic process. For instance, this conforming bill, as it's called, HB 7069, it's a, you know, it's this huge education bill that includes several school choice provisions. It's 278 pages, you know, and I think people would argue, you know, every lawmaker has read that, knows it. But again, I think all this leads to cynicism with the public. To your question, I think they're going to come back at some point, maybe next week, but they got to get back before the end of the month because the new fiscal year starts July 1st.
Let's tackle a little bit of that conforming bill of 7069. It's a set of digits that much of Florida who's engaged in education policy and spending has had to learn over the past several weeks. This is to some degree also a negotiating tactic with the governor and with the legislature regarding his priorities, the governor's priorities of money for job incentives and money for tourism marketing. The House Republicans have been supportive of that, perhaps in exchange for the governor's signature on 7069, which does a lot of things regarding teacher bonuses, charter schools, and a lot of other education policy minutiae, but is important to parents and teachers and community leaders. We put this out to our Public Insight Network members at the WLRN Miami Herald PIN Network, Public Insight Network. Here's a few responses.
My name is Enrique Baloira, and I'm a math teacher at North Miami Middle School. They spend a lot of money on making it seem like choice is a good thing in education, as if competition were a good thing in education. But really, the research shows that collaboration is what works when schools work together instead of competing for the same dollars.
My name is Wayne Worthley. I'm here at Redland Middle School teaching agri-science and food science. I'm in my 22nd year, and I live in the local community known as the Redlands. The teacher bonus is misleading because very few teachers will get it. For example, you have to be, first of all, highly effective. It's very hard to become highly effective in a Title I school where many of the students struggle with reading, so you won't get it if you're not highly effective. Second, they're going to look at your ACT and SAT scores, but I took that when I was 17 years old in a rural community up in Minnesota, and I don't think that's going to determine whether or not I'm a good teacher.
Couple of voices against this conforming bill regarding education policy. Mickey sent us a note. Saying that the governor should sign it. Quote, public education has been the greatest failure in U.S. history, Mickey wrote us. Let free enterprise compete to provide better education for our children. Let's go to Javier in Miami on the telephone. Javier, you are on the radio. Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I am also an educator. I work with Dade County Public Schools. And it's truly the way that the legislature has gone about the budget this year is actually terrible. And I sent two letters to the Miami Herald, and you can look them up. One had to do with the Schools of Hope. And if you look at Rene Garcia from Hialeah's comment in today's Miami Herald, he said they're just taking away money from public education and giving it to the private enterprise. And that is just not the right way to do it. And as the previous commenter from school systems said, it is very, very difficult to become highly effective as a teacher. So also the way in which teachers are being rewarded is truly off course with reality.
Javier, we appreciate your thoughts. Thank you for sharing them with us. I want to the bigger point that you made there, Javier, I want to put it to Senator Graham. Javier started his comments, Senator, saying that the procedure that has led to this, he called it a terrible procedure. What is your assessment? You talked earlier about some procedural possibilities to think about. What are some of those top of mind as this special session perhaps end with another one to begin soon, perhaps?
Well, I'm going to talk about them in the context of the Constitutional Revision Commission, which may be one of the dullest topics that you can conceive, which is meeting now. There are dull in news means
it's important, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there are things that the reality is that the legislature is never going to pass as a constitutional amendment that will be very difficult for citizens to pass because they aren't very sexy, but are important. And this is exactly why the Constitutional Revision Commission was established. I would say three of those areas are: one, transparency. We used to be the sunshine state. Now we've become the dark hole of American politics. Second is in ethics. Unfortunately, Florida has been, over the last couple of decades, one of the highest level states in terms of the number of public servants who have been convicted of some crime involving that public service. And then third, the legislature itself. You mentioned, is 60 days still the relevant amount of time for the third largest state in the country to get its business done? So I think that this would be the ideal time to have citizens talking about what should we be doing at the most fundamental level, our state constitution, in areas transparency, ethics, and legislative structure that will hopefully reduce the number of 2017 years through which Floridians will have to live.
Sergio, you have lived through a lot of legislative cycles. How would you characterize this one? Is it still active?
Still rather dysfunctional, although I think a few years ago when the discussion of the Medicaid expansion was a more heartier debate, it just took forever to finally reach a decision. But one thing I would note, and this is something that's been happening since Governor Scott came to office, is where is he? Yesterday, he was at what some would call a dog and pony show at the White House talking about the nation's infrastructure problems. And then this week, he penned an editorial, if you will, and shared it. And what was it about? It was about coming down harder on Venezuela and Cuba. Now, last time I checked, Venezuela and Cuba are not one of the 67 counties in Florida. But obviously, it's an interesting topic, maybe for his Senate campaign. But in a week that he called a special session, you would think he would be down here trying to work out and help these two sides reach an agreement. After all, they're all from the same party.
Yeah.
Tom, does that sound like a familiar refrain? How many times have I said, why isn't Governor Scott walking the halls and threatening to break kneecaps? And where is he? Every time I'm on the show, I think I say the same thing.
Yeah. Well, when it came to the job incentive priorities that he had and the money for Visit Florida, he was making the case in front of cameras and microphones at small and medium sized businesses in the hospitality and manufacturing industry throughout the state of Florida, oftentimes except for Tallahassee. Senator Graham,
he is in town this afternoon, though, just so everyone knows. I just want you to know he is here today.
The record will show he is in Leon County in Tallahassee.
He wants to know what your vacation schedule is going to be.
But Senator Graham, to that point, you alluded to the engagement in the leadership of Governor Scott earlier. How much of this is at the feet of the governor's office?
I'd say a substantial amount. As I said earlier, the governor is the statewide elected official who has the responsibility to take the big picture view of what's in the state's interest and advocate that to a legislature of 160 people who are each looking out for their specific district and, unfortunately, frequently without much thought about how it's going to affect the rest of the state. So I think he has a key role in leadership, and when that leadership is not provided, you have what's going on this week.
We will end the note by considering these numbers. 20 million people in Florida, 160 legislators, 67 counties, 60 days in a regular legislative session, two chambers in the state legislature, and one governor. One governor has joined us, one former governor. Yeah. Bob Graham, thank you. Great to have you back on the program again.
Great. Thanks, Tom.
Derek Hamm is with us via Skype from the News Service of Florida in Tallahassee. Sergio Bustos, senior editor for Politico, also along with us. Stick with us. We got more to come here on the Roundup. It's been 1 year, almost 1 year now, after the Pulse nightclub massacre. What has not happened with the LGBTQ protections and gun legislation, plus the people who survived? That's all next.